how to start?
Well, you know, it's just writing. I mean,
here's something important to remember about dialogue.
Every word matters.
No, it doesn't.
They're vital.
I want to go to this place that I think it needs to go to.
The only thing that counts is what you see on the screen.
I will write like 4, 5, 6 hours a day.
And it will be a voice made of ink and rage.
Okay, I'm really glad you asked me that question.
Welcome back to the show. In this episode, I sat down with Lee Hardcastle. Lee is a renowned claymation director celebrated for his dark humor and innovative style. Through the years, he has honed his skills to create captivating short films, blending horror, comedy, and absurdity, and his unique storytelling and attention to detail have earned him a global following. His work ranges from grotesque parodies of popular franchises to original tales of macabre madness, pushing the boundaries of clay animation. In this interview, we talk about what led to claymation, how he approaches his stories, going viral on various social media networks, and how comments and feedback have affected his work, getting comfortable in his creative process, and so much more. Here's my conversation with Lee Hardcastle.
I went to film school. I wanted to be a film director. That was kind of like a bit of an early goal in my life as a teenager. I just sort of hung on to that idea of, oh, I'm going to be a filmmaker one day. And I really believed in that idea as well. So I was making comic books and doing anything that involved storytelling, anything that would sort of progress me to one day become a filmmaker. And then when I left high school, I went to film school, spent 3 years doing pretty much what I wanted to do, really. Just dick about with a camera and get to know the logistics of filmmaking. And it was through that experience at film school that I sort of relied on stop motion animation and playing with stop motion animation in a sort of, as a result of not being able to sort of get films, projects funded. So I was in a situation where I had no budget. And then as a result of that, I sort of started to explore stop motion animation, and through doing that, I quickly sort of realized that it was quite a fun thing. It felt really quite promising straight away from what I was doing. Like I liked what the results were of that. And because there was no budget needed to do it, I approached my teachers at school, the people that were passing the projects off and funding them. I just said, look, you don't even have to give me any money. Like, let me just do my bullshit idea. I can do it on my own. I can do it with stop motion animation. And they were fine with that. And, you know, and everything sort of spawned from that moment forward. Like I always hung on to that idea, wanting to be a filmmaker. And so on the side, rather than doing, I was doing comic books still, but I was sort of progressing a lot more into stop motion animation. And initially I began starting with just action figures, because I didn't know nothing about puppets or claymation or anything like that. But then I started to run into problems where I couldn't have G.I. Joe in my film because of licensing issues, you know, for the same reason why you couldn't really have a Barbie doll in your film and say, you know, here's my film starring Barbie. It doesn't quite work like that. So to get around that problem, initially what I did was I put plasticine over the top of the action figures, because I was like, well, maybe this can get around the problem. But straight away I realized it didn't really work because it was a bit too clumpy. So then I just went into plasticine, and then when I did a plasticine stop motion animation, there was a bit more of a response. There was a bit more of a success from that. So that's when that became a thing then. That's when I sort of hung on to like that success, like trying to follow that success. And like, I could see that was working. So I was like trying to just continue that. And that's how I ended up on this claymation adventure that I'm on.
Was there a point in the early days where it was like overwhelming how much time actually goes into it? So obviously you didn't have the budget, but you could put a lot of time, but still, like, it takes forever to do these things, right?
Yeah, it depends what level you want to do it at. So when I was first starting to do it, I was doing it at a level where it was action figures on your bedroom floor. I wasn't even animating on a table for most of it. And during that time as well, like I'd had the experience of making films on a live action scale and working with teams and doing all the pre-production and everything. And so I got to experience within the same time the pros and cons of doing a live action shoot compared to doing a stop motion animation shoot. And if you were to do a stop motion animation properly with studios and how they're done professionally, to the Wes Anderson standard, let's just say. There's a lot involved in that. Like, you know, you've got to command all these people and, you know, you understand, right? You can, so that's one way of doing it, or you can just do it on your bedroom floor, like set up a camera, and it's, you know, you've got no one to blame but yourself, and a lot of, and straight away you're cutting out a lot of crew, so you're a one-man show, and a lot is forgiven in your production, like people don't scrutinize it so much because they can see that it's just a guy on his own, and sort of like they can see how he's used his strengths and his weakness to his weaknesses as his strengths, and, you know, so it wasn't, it was never really daunting. It was actually like a bit of a shortcut, really, because I found it quicker to do a stop motion animation than get a lot of people involved to do a production. So that's how I've always looked at it. Like, it's got its, you know, it's got its its advantages and its setbacks. And then, you know, it depends how much work you want to put into these things. Like, you can make anything overwhelming, you know.
Did it change anything about the way you want to tell stories? Like, did you often start with the character or the claymation, or did you go and like write a full story first? Like, how did that kind of shape your thinking about being a storyteller?
I don't know. I guess every story that I've approached has sort of come from a different place and a different approach, and through different means, through different sort of sparks of ideas becoming fruitation. I don't really know like how I approach things, really. I just kind of like, maybe I get like a bit of a vibe, a bit of an idea, a bit of an idea of what kind of thing I feel like making. So if I want to make something with a lot of action in it, I'll start to like think of a scenario where that would fit that. Like, what kind of action am I feeling? Like, what would be a good story to fit that? And then, you know, we want an exploding car, so let's write a scenario where there's a bomb in the car, you know, and a lot of that sort of comes to fruition through that way. To be honest, I've never really sort of been a person as a storyteller, being one of these people that have started with a character. Like, I've never felt like, oh, I've got this character, he's like Indiana Jones, he's James Bond, do you know what I mean? I've never really, like, characters have always taken like a bit of a backseat with my approach, I think, really. But yeah, I mean, I always sort of believe that character and story and everything all feeds into each other. Like, the story is character, blah, blah, blah.
Famously, James Cameron talks about moments. Like, moments come to him first, and then he kind of wraps the story around that. Is that kind of how you see it? Like, you're trying to connect a few pieces together?
Yeah. I'll have moments. Yeah. I understand what that means by old Jimmy Cameron there. And, you know, it is just like a moment. A lot of the times I get a lot of inspiration from dreams that I have. I really like to pick apart my dreams. I always feel so excited when I wake up in the morning and I've had a dream. And sometimes, like, there'll just be something really strange about some sort of detail in a dream, and I'll really explore that and like try and like understand how what that means, and like try and like build a bit of context around it. And sort of like, you know, I guess it's kind of a feeling, you know, an image or an idea just gives you a certain sort of feeling, and you want to explore that. And that's sort of like the thing that pushes you to want to do it. What's that word? Encourages you to do this thing called create stories and make stories.
It's like the inspiration.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Like,
I think it was in his masterclass. I think he's even talking about Terminator, the robot coming out of the fire, which I think was actually stop motion too, back in the initial idea of it. What was the thing that like took off for you on social media? Like, when did people start to really connect with you? What were they seeing? Was there one particular short that did the best?
It was actually these parodies that I was doing that really took off. I did a parody of The Evil Dead for a competition where you had to retell the whole film within 60 seconds. So a lot of the comedy came from the fact that, you know, an hour and a half film can be summarized within 60 seconds. And that was my first experience of something going viral and people just being really on board and really impressed with what I did. So actually, that was kind of, if you want to call it my career, like the start of my claymation career, like that's where I started like doing parodies of films. So I did a series of these. I did about 7 in total in the end. And then I tried to balance that out by doing short films in between that, like just trying to like craft my, you know, exercise my craft as a filmmaker and a storyteller. Like, because I didn't want to just be this guy that does parodies. I wanted to like also prove like, oh, you know, I'm also the guy that can make films. I can make original content too. So yeah, that was my first experience going viral, like those parodies. And I've always, so I always used that as like a hook to get an audience as well, like just get to bring the audience to my YouTube channel and to, you know, explore the other content that I had on there. That was always sort of my strategy.
Was there like an average number of scenes and characters you had to make to tell that in 60 seconds? Like how much work went into that before you could really even get going?
I did it so like dirt cheap. Low budget. A lot of the sets, you know, you don't even realize what you're looking at. A lot of the times it'll just be a t-shirt hung up in the background, or like I'll just get some paper and just like quickly like felt tip a tree. There you go, they're outside now. I was just and I with them things, you know, like the because I was trying to make money. I had no financial security at the time, so I was really in a desperate situation to make money, and a lot of my decisions were like, you know, if I spend 2 weeks on this, you know, that's what you've got to make this and then move on to the next project. So I was like trying to like make time a thing and like just use that as a strength as well. So it was, you know, you can, I mean, when I watch them back, like I can see how cheap and nasty they are, but I don't know if that like registers with regular viewers or not.
Yeah, because you could tell a story either way. Do you have advice for those people who are just like, maybe they want to do this, but they're scared to even start? Like, it seems like you didn't really have that. You just kind of dove into it.
Advice, I'd say, I always say, like, you've just got to go for it. You just got to attempt it. Just see how it feels, if you enjoy it or not. If it doesn't work out, I mean, if it doesn't work out and you feel like you can still attempt it and have another go at it, then that's what it's about. You know, it's about pushing yourself to go in that direction. And if it, you know, sometimes it might not be fun. Sometimes you might not enjoy it. And sometimes you might go, you know what, like, this is not for me. Then you move on to the next thing, you know. But yeah, rather than just sat there and saying like, one day I might want to be this, I think they don't quite work like that. Like there's other things that you can be doing. So I used to make comic books. It was like my fallback to being a filmmaker. If I couldn't get a video camera, if I couldn't get a crew, or I'd make comic books, because I was like, well, at least, you know, that's sort of like making films. So yeah, just sort of spend your waking moments like thinking about how you can sort of contribute to them sort of goals in your life, and you start to do like other things that help that, you know.
As you kind of started to get some traction online, I'm sure there's comments and all kinds of stuff. Are there things that like influence your work in a positive way, like the way you think about telling stories or what type of stories you want to tell?
Sorry, can you say that again?
So like obviously over time, you got a lot of comments and maybe some feedback. The work started to look better. You put more time into it. But did anyone's like any of those opinions or likes or comments start to shape the way that you made the work for your audience?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because when I'm making the content, I'm doing it for YouTube. So when I've been making content for YouTube, I've had to think about the algorithm. I've had to think about what's trending, what does well, what people end up, you know, I have to think about all these sort of things. And so a big part of that is paying attention to what people are saying in the comments and looking at the ones that get upvoted. And you can, I think it's important. Well, I've always felt like it was important to pay attention to that sort of thing. So back in the day when I first started out, I could tell like people pointing the production values out on them, saying like, you know, this is really cheap, this is really like lazy done, whatever. And I could agree with that. I was like, you know, yeah, you're right. That's lazy. That was kind of done within a week, but I did it for these reasons. But, you know, it sort of made me realize that if I'm going to do things at a level where, you know, especially if I'm getting paid, especially if someone's giving me the money to make something, you know, I've got to like realize what that means. Like, okay, so it means like working this amount of time a week and making things look not made out of paper and drawn a tree in the background. Otherwise, it's people gonna feel. I don't want people to feel like they got ripped off. I want them to feel like they've seen, like they can see that I've worked for a week, like making them trees in the background, so they know that the money has actually gone somewhere useful and not like pocketed it and ran away and gone, hey, fuck you guys, I've just fucking cheated you. But yeah, but yeah, you just sort of like learn like how to sort of like up your game, I guess. Learn where you're no longer being forgiven. Because there's that balance of like, you know, you can get away with so much because people respect the ambition that you're putting into it. So they're like, oh, you know, you can see that's made out of wool. You can see that's made out of a bit of sellotape, whatever. But every now and again, it's like there is like impressive ways of upping your game. And it's whether or not you want to invest that time and invest that craftsmanship into it. So yeah, it's all about a big balance, but I always really pay attention to what people are saying in the comments. And you know, I even made like short content based on what people are saying in the comments. Like it's like if someone suggests, oh, this would be a great idea for a video, I'll be like, you know what, yeah, you're right. Like I wouldn't have thought of that, but cheers. Fucking I can see that people want this, so let's do it. Let's give you what you want.
How long have you been doing this? Like, when did you, like, how many years have you been doing this now?
It's wild to think about, actually. Full time since 2010. We're in year 2024 right now. So 14 years full time. And then, you know, part time, even longer than that. I started to get into it like around 2006, the whole stop motion thing, like 2005, 2006, like towards the end of my film school. So yeah, I never thought I'd be a stop motion animator. It was never on my cards to be a stop motion animator. I'm surprised that I'm here at the age of almost 40, and I've been in isolation all this time making stop motion animations. Like, I can't believe I'm saying it.
Do you see like a clear progression in your work? Like, you mentioned a lot of things, like just spending more time, but do you see like, oh, I'd never do that again. Or like, you see like every year you're growing as an artist.
Yeah, I definitely see the progress, but it's sort of like, I guess it goes a bit like this, like up and down, because at the moment, like, I don't know, I don't feel like I'm pushing myself as hard anymore. Like I'm at a standard where it's like, I'm quite comfortable and I'm not pushing myself in ways that I used to do in the past, because I've reached a standard where I know what works and I know what people want to see. So that's how I feel at the moment.
It's like a high standard, but more relaxed. Cause when you're younger, you can stretch yourself out. Right.
I sort of like go through leaps, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So I'll go through a leap where it's like, all of a sudden you've got like, you go from static shots and all of a sudden there's like camera movements because I've invested in some new camera equipment, and you can see like, I mean, I've invested in better cameras. I've invested in better puppets. I've invested in, sometimes I've even hired talent. Sometimes I've had a budget where I've brought in outside talent to make my thing look better, you know? So that's when you can see like the improvement. But then it's like, sometimes I'll just, there's a bit of a situation with myself and what I do as a stop motion animator and as a brand, is that a lot of people want to work with me because of my style, and that style is, you know, it's low budget and there's a bit of chic to that. Like there's a bit of a, people want that. So it's like, if you're given money that you're not used to handling and you think, oh, I'm going to make this look really good, you can do something that's a bit different to what they were expecting. Like, no, we want like the goofy faces. We want them to look like a 5-year-old has constructed this, and you go, oh, right. Okay. Yeah, you've got to sort of be I've learned to become aware of that. So I sort of celebrate the fact if something looks terrible on screen sometimes. I'm like, that looks so bad, but people are going to love that. Like, they're going to love, like, you know, because they love like a thumbprint on someone's face. And it's like, if I can't be bothered like spending the next 5 minutes trying to fix that, it's like someone's going to see that and they're going to laugh. Like, leave it. Let's move on. Let's get on with the day. So yeah, it's an interesting situation to be aware of that. It took me quite a while to sort of understand this.
Yeah. It's kind of like in Team America, they wanted the puppets to look kind of stupid, right? Like they didn't want them to look too smooth and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What's kind of like from idea to finished product, what does that timeline look like? Can you just walk through kind of the bullet points of something like that?
That's a really hard question to answer because it depends on so much stuff, like the length of the project, down to the style that you're doing it in. To cut round corners, well, I don't know if that's the right way of saying this, but just to like keep things within budget and easy to film, I always go to this idea of like doing something in one location and like building like a really good location and then exploring what would be interesting to film in that one location, and just put a lot of effort into that one location, like how we can get like a lot of stuff out of it, like different angles. Like it's almost like building a dollhouse, and then you build your dolls, and now you can see it all. You can sort of like have fun like visualizing like how this is gonna piece together in video. So that's always like my go-to way of doing things, just to, especially if I'm restricted by budget. And then just start out with storyboards is quite a standard thing. Load them storyboards into my computer. I turn that into an animatic. From my animatic, I use that to animate. And then you add the sound, make sure everything's cool in post-production, and that's usually sort of like the whole gist of the process. Like it's not a very mysterious art form, to be brutally honest. Like it's not, like to a lot of people it looks quite beyond anything they could actually understand is going on. Like they think, oh wow, there's a lot of work that's gone into that. But for me, I think actually I think a lot of people don't understand how straightforward it is. Like it's just a puppet in front of a camera and you're manipulating it, and you know, it's not very much far from that truth.
It sounds like you were kind of like self-taught a lot of this stuff, but are there things you learn like studying Wallace and Gromit or Wes Anderson or Tim Burton that you still use today?
Yeah, I've got a 2-year-old, so I'm watching a lot of cartoons as it is at the moment, and I'm introducing him to some of the classics. Like I've got the Wallace and Gromit on DVD and watching them with him. You know, I've not watched these shorts and stuff for my own entertainment, never mind my own entertainment, but like watching it with someone through someone else's eyes, especially a 2-year-old boy. And suddenly you have this new perspective on the animation that you never noticed the first time around. And so it's like, you know, over the years, I revisit some of this stuff and I can see the work that's gone into it. And it's quite, you know, it blows my mind still, some of the animation that was done that I grew up with in the 80s and 90s. I watch some of this stuff now and I'm just really in awe of it, just absolutely blown away because they did put a lot of work in it. I learn every time I watch animation and stuff like that. Like I've always been like that. Like even growing up as a kid, I felt like I've always been watching animation from a perspective of like movement and seeing how they did motion blur, and I've always gone, oh, you know, that's interesting, like how they've done that. And so I guess that's where my education has come from, like just being aware and paying attention to animation and movement and that sort of stuff. Self-taught, I don't know if self-taught is the right word, because you know, I've had teachers in my life, not necessarily animation teachers, but you know, I've had art tutors, I've had film school tutors, and when they've known that I've been interested in animation or movement or whatever, you know, they've supplied me with worksheets and, you know, they've given me a direction to go into. So I might not have been like on an animation course where they strictly teach animation, but, you know, I have always had like a lot of education based on my interests is what I'm saying. So it's like, I don't know if you want to call that self-taught or not.
Is there any, we're almost at a time, but any other advice you maybe wish you had in the beginning about starting a career like this?
I can't really think of any solid advice really, other than to bide your time, don't worry about time, as long as you're doing what you enjoy doing, then, and if you can make it pay for itself, then that's great. And just bide your time. Don't rush into things, like don't panic. Just keep at it, I guess.
Thanks so much for tuning into the show. Before you take off, I want to give you a free gift. I'm giving you my first book, Ink by the Barrel, for free. That's the digital download and audiobook at brockswenson.com. Inside this book, you learn how to annihilate writer's block by embracing Elizabeth Gilbert's playful trickster mentality. You can learn to weaponize your anxiety with Kevin Kelly's different is better approach, and learn how to defend your time with Ryan Holiday's calendar anorexia mindset. There's just a few other ideas in the book, Ink by the Barrel. It's also based on over 400 interviews I've done right here on Creative Principles. So go steal that book right now, Ink by the Barrel, to learn how to be a prolific writer. You can get your copy, that's digital download and audiobook, at brockswinson.com, brockswinson.com. And if it's your first time here, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Make sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode.